Welcome to episode 1461 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. Today, we continue our series on the life and times of the apostles. Our focus this week is on Thomas, also known as Didymus. Thomas is remembered by history for one moment of doubt, one question, one refusal to accept what others had already believed. But no life should be reduced to a single moment. And Thomas's story begins long before the upper room. He was not a man opposed to faith. He was a man who needed faith to be true. He examined before he trusted, questioned before he committed, and once convinced, held his convictions with uncommon strength. Acts of the Apostles, Part 3, Chapter 1.
My name means twin. Thomas, in Aramaic, Taoma. In Greek, they called me Didymus, which means the same thing. Two names, one meaning. Some said I looked like Jesus and was often confused for him. Some even went as far as to claim that I was the Lord's twin brother. Imagine that. Presumably, I had a brother. Whether he was my literal twin, or whether the name came to me some other way, I cannot tell you with certainty. And I have learned over a long life of demanding certainty from things that can supply it, and accepting ambiguity from things that cannot, to live with that particular uncertainty peacefully. What I can tell you is this. The name eventually took on a meaning larger than anything my parents intended when they gave it to me. By the end, by the moment that most people remember when they hear my name, the twin I was most like was myself, the man before the upper room and the man after it. Two versions of the same person, almost unrecognizable to each other. But I am not beginning there. I am beginning at the beginning. I was born in the Galilean city of Pansata, in the Roman province of Galilee. I was a fisherman by trade, as were many men where I came from. Fishing teaches you certain things if you do it long enough. You learn to pay attention to the wind, to the movement of the water, to the weight of a net as you pull it toward the boat. You learn that hope is not the same thing as evidence, that a promising stretch of water may hold nothing, and that a night of hard work may leave you with empty nets. You learn to read what is actually in front of you rather than what you wish were there. Perhaps that shaped something in me. Perhaps I was already that way before I ever stepped into a boat. I cannot say for certain. I was not by nature a man who trusted easily. This is not a complaint about my upbringing or an excuse for anything that came later. It is simply an accurate description of how I was made. Some people move through the world leading with confidence. They encounter something new and their first instinct is to receive it, to open toward it. I was not like that. My first instinct was to examine, to look for the join between what was being claimed and what could be verified, to ask the question that no one else seemed to want to ask out loud. This made me, I am told, occasionally difficult to travel with. It also meant that when I finally believed something, I believed it all the way through. There was no soft center to my convictions. No part that had been carried along by enthusiasm or social pressure or the desire to belong to something larger than myself. What I held because I had tested it. And what I had tested and found true was held more firmly than anything a more trusting person could have managed. The others used to tease me about it. Gently, mostly. Philip once said that traveling with me was like traveling with a man who insisted on measuring the road before he would walk on it. I told him that a man who measures the road is less likely to fall into the ditch. He said the road still got walked. I said yes, but I know exactly how long it is. I do not think Philip found this as satisfying as I did. But that is who I was when Jesus called me. Not a man of simple faith. A man of rigorous standards for what he would call faith at all. People assume that because I am known for doubting, I must have been reluctant to follow in the first place. That is not quite right. I had heard him teach before I met him personally. That was enough to make me want to meet him. And the teaching was, I need to be careful here because I have heard many teachers in my life and I do not distribute praise carelessly, unlike anything I had encountered. It was not eloquence. There were many eloquent men in Galilee. It was not learning, though he was learned in the scriptures in a way that still astonishes me when I think about it. It was something harder to name. A quality of authority is the word the Gospels use, and it is the right word, but it needs unpacking. Not the authority of a man who has been given a position. The authority of a man who has direct access to the thing he is talking about, as if he were not interpreting someone else's account of reality, but speaking from inside it. I examined this carefully. I looked for the cracks in it. I waited for the moment when the teaching would contradict itself, when the inner logic would fail, when I would catch the seam between what was being projected and what was actually there. I never found it. That was not something I could ignore. A man of my disposition cannot hear something that holds up under scrutiny and simply walk away from it. Walking away would have been its own kind of irrationality, and whatever else I am not willing to be irrational. So when he called me, I went. Not with Peter's leaping out of the boat abandoned, not with the quiet, settled weight of James deciding to stay. I went the way I do everything. After examining the question, concluding that the answer pointed in one direction, and committing to that direction with everything I had. Everything I had turned out to be more than I knew. I am going to tell you something about following Jesus that the other accounts do not emphasize, because the men who wrote them were not constituted the way I am. He was consistent. That sounds like a small thing. It is not. I have known charismatic teachers whose power lay in the performance, who were brilliant in front of crowds and diminished in private, who saved their best for the moments when they were being watched. I watched Jesus in the moments when no one else was watching. When we were tired, and the disciples were arguing, and the road was long, and the next town was ungrateful, when the people who came to him were difficult, and the questions were bad faith, and the day had offered nothing to recommend it, he was exactly the same. This is more remarkable than any miracle I witnessed. Miracles are episodic. They happen, and then they are over, and you are left with the memory of them to carry. But consistency is continuous. It does not have gaps. And a man without gaps is either a fraud, or he is something the categories I was given cannot quite contain. I spent 3 years looking for the gap. I am a thorough person. I looked carefully. And when I could not find it in him, in the private moments, in the difficult moments, in the moments that strip away what a person is performing and reveal what they actually are, I had to consider the possibility that there was no gap. That what he presented was what he was, all the way through. I was not sure what to do with that conclusion. It was the most important conclusion of my life, and the most unsettling, and the one that I was still holding in both hands, turning over, testing from every angle. When we came to the outskirts of Bethany, and we heard what had happened to Lazarus. But that is the next episode.
There is a kind of faith that comes quickly, and there is a kind that arrives only after long examination. Jesus seems to have room for both. He did not demand that Thomas become Peter before he could follow. He called Thomas as he was, questioning, analytical, careful, and allowed that very temperament to become part of his journey toward belief. Perhaps some of us have been made to feel that our questions are evidence of weak faith. Thomas reminds us that honest scrutiny and genuine faith are not enemies. The danger is not in asking whether something is true. The danger is refusing to follow when the truth has become clear. Thomas looked closely at Jesus and found no gap between his public words and his private life. What Jesus taught, he lived. What he appeared to be, he was. That same invitation remains before us. We are not asked to believe in a performance, an image, or a carefully constructed religious persona. We are invited to examine Christ, to listen to his words, watch his life, consider his character, and decide what we will do with what we find. Thomas discovered that the more carefully he looked, the harder it became to walk away. Sometimes the road to deep faith begins not by silencing our questions, but by following them honestly until they lead us to Jesus. To be continued.